This is the Skillist Podcast. Okay, crew, here we go again. Week two of our comeback, and what a week it's been. We've just heard overnight that Tiger Woods is now leaving Nike. Well, actually, Luda's got a bit of a conspiracy theory, I think, going on there. He thinks there could be something else to it. So we'll have to get you to talk about that, mate. What do you reckon it was a bit cryptic?
No, I just read the statement and didn't really see anything about it being totally over. So who knows? But what a legendary partnership. I think we're all sort of sitting here loving golf because of that partnership from 96, 97 onwards. Unreal.
You would assume that they've done as much for each other as they have for each other, if that makes sense. Like, I think that, I mean, obviously Tiger, I think he's obviously made $500 million out of the contract over the past, you know, 20 whatever years. First contract was $40 million in 96, $100 million just after 5 years after that, and then he signed an 8-year contract for $160 million, 10-year contract for $200 million, which takes him quite literally after up to half $1 billion, which is crazy over that period. But yeah, I think that they were just like a match made in heaven, and like it helped modernize. Not only did Tiger modernize golf, but Nike coming into golf helped modernize golf at the exact same time.
Oh, definitely. First thing I did as a kid was go buy that red shirt, you know, when I was 14. And I think half the golfing young population did the same thing. So He made the game cool. That's the reason I really got into it. I was already into golf, but he made it what I want to do just because he made it cool. He was the king. It was so thankful we got to watch him for all those years. And you watch the golf now, it's still awesome. But without him, it's just not quite the same watching golf.
No, probably never will be. But did you ever use any of the equipment or any of the – I always found their shoes incredibly uncomfortable whenever I wore them. I haven't worn, you know, the newer iterations, but I always found their shoes really uncomfortable and never really used – any of their equipment. But there's a few diehards out there that have just like some of those Nike blades. And I think Tommy Fleetwood continued to use his Nike 3-wood, I think, up until relatively recently. He just loved it. I don't know if you ever used much of the equipment.
No, I didn't really ever use any of their clubs, but some of my buddies, and actually who we had on here before, Ryan Ruffles, had those Nike blades, which at the end of the day, a blade golf club, they're not too different from any other company. Blades, there's not much technology. There's not much you can do. But there was that one set of Nike blades that sat beautifully. And as you said, a lot of diehards bought them up off eBay. And Tiger did use them for a long time. So, yeah, crazy times. I guess a lot of guys are leaving Nike. Maybe they're not going to be as invested in golf anymore. We'll see going forward, but never use the gear.
Yeah, I think it's like a very interesting time for Nike. I think that there's a lot at play there in the background. I don't know if you follow like running much at all, but I think they're sort of getting their lunch eaten like in their hardcore space of, you know, track and field and running, where there's brand new companies like Hoka and On, which I don't know if you've heard of either of those companies, but they are absolute, like, in terms of like the hardcore runners, that's what everyone's wearing now. Like, you actually don't see, like, if you watch all of like the, I love, believe it or not, I love a bit of Iron Man and you know, Ultra. I'll talk about like the, I do love that, but like, in terms of, you know, like it's Kona Iron Man. I'm talking about like the, you know, the, what is it, 3.9K swim and like the 190K bike ride and then the marathon at the end of it sort of thing, that sort of Ironman. Everyone in that is wearing Hoka or On now. Like, no one wears Nike. So I think that they're just in a really interesting spot, because I think that there's no doubt, like, the golf is a growth market for them probably. But I think that they'll, like, there's a lot of interesting things happening, you know, in their core market where they're losing a lot of ground. So I don't know, like, hopefully, I don't think it's a reflection, obviously, on what's happening in golf. They don't see it as an opportunity, but I do think that they just need to invest their money probably, you know, where they made all their money in the first place. Golf was always, well, it was definitely like a money loser for them when it came to equipment. But, you know, I don't think they obviously see, you know, the 80 million golfers in the world as their core market. It's the, you know, billion runners or something like that, and basketballers obviously around the world that are.
Definitely. I think Tiger made Nike Golf kind of what it was, which was huge, you know, massive. You'd see guys wearing the shirts everywhere. You know, as his career winds down, it kind of makes sense, I guess, that maybe they'll still be in golf, but maybe not as heavily.
Just really quickly, what equipment are you using at the moment? Do you have a deal with anyone?
Yeah, TaylorMade. Yeah, I use TaylorMade through the bag.
All right.
Blades through to Five Iron. I think anyone now, very rarely will you see guys with blade long irons.
No.
And I think a lot of that goes is due to the technology. The ball's so hot now, right? That even, you know, a spinnier ball now, it still flies through the air so flat that I'm not sure about Rory, but you'll seldomly see tour players with blade long irons. You'll see a lot of them, you know, with maybe pitching wedge through to 7-6 iron.
Yeah.
But having that extra bit of help and launch with the long irons just makes all the sense in the world now. So, TaylorMade and their wedges that I'm using, absolutely fantastic. What are they? The new, I think it's S4 or something, or G4, whatever they are, but loving them. And
they've been making good wedges for a while now. Like some of their other stuff, like personally, for whatever reason, I don't particularly like, but I think they've been making really good wedges for a long time now. I don't even mind those high toe. Have you ever used the high toe, or you just hated looking down?
Yeah, JD used them for a long time, and I got a bunch of hand-me-downs with different grinds. They were good. For certain grass conditions, the high toes were great, particularly if it was kind of wet or, you know, softer. They gave you a little bit more relief, the bounce profile. But here in Florida on the really tight Bermuda, you want just a little less bounce than that.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that in a second. I want to get your feedback on a debate which is obviously raging around short game, how to chip, whether you need to be steep or shallow. But, like, let's just save that for a second and keep going through your bag. So you said at 5-iron you finish your blades. I assume then you go with your cavity back for 4 and then 3-iron? Or do you not?
No, I go 5 and 4-iron with the tungsten, which I think every company's got that now.
Yeah,
which really helped launch the golf ball. So 4 and 5-iron, a little bit bigger head with the tungsten, get that launch angle up, and then I rotate between a 2-iron if it's really windy, that's just like a low screamer and runs forever.
Yeah,
or a 5-wood, which is probably my favorite club, my 5-wood. So, and then 3-wood driver, 4 wedges, putter. So,
and where do you hit your 5-wood? Like everywhere, like on tight par 4s and then into par 5s and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love this. It's an old M2, so it's quite a few models old, but just brilliant. I can hit a high or low, but if it's really windy and the ground's firm, like in Australia, for tee shots, I like the 2-iron, which, again, has got the tungsten in there, so it's got that bit of technology, and it's a rocket ship, but it's not great for holding par 5s and stuff. That's where you want the 5-wood if it's more sort of carrying, you know, having to carry the ball and get some height on it. So that's when I rotate. And a lot of guys do that.
Yeah, totally. Oh, they're awesome. What pebble roll are you running with at the moment? Like, what are you putt with?
Oh, I got to give a shout out to the TaylorMade rep, Paul Demkowski. He's like the head guy for TaylorMade putters at Carlsbad. He sent me one. It's a custom spider, kind of similar to JD's, but a little bit different. Okay. A little bit different neck, so it's face balance.
Right.
And touch wood, the last month or so, I don't know if I've putted better ever. Putting really well.
Wow. How good's that?
Since he sent me this putter, it's got a little Aussie flag on the bottom.
Yeah, cool.
And he stamped my name on there. It's, I'm telling you, I haven't putted like this in a while, and I'm putting it down to the putter.
How good's that? That's awesome. I've got a really good putter story. So my putter, which I never thought I would swap out my old putter. I had this old, like, Odyssey black with a bit of tungsten on the back of it. It's now a relatively common shape, but I just absolutely adored it and never thought I'd ever get rid of it. But I got invited to play at Steph Curry's. Like, you know, we talk about Steph a bit because, you know, doing it.
Yeah, sure. Like,
I got invited.
He loves his golf.
Yeah, oh, my God, absolutely. But we got invited as skillers to go and play in his charity event at Stanford, right? This was, you know, 18 months ago or whatever it was. Anyway, I was playing there with one of our investors and, you know, an incredible mentor to me, Albert Lee, who created MyFitnessPal, which is the biggest sports and fitness app ever created. Anyway, I went and hit some balls, came back up, and it's so, you know what those events are like. It's, you know, Kuchar's running around, Snedeker's there, you know, Larry Fitzgerald. There's just like, there's a little bit of like tequila on every team. Like, you know, you, this is what you do for the weekend later. But for me, anyway, I went and hit some balls and I came up and the Odyssey guys, the Callaway guys were on the putting green and they were doing putter fits and Albert was getting his putter fitted. And I was like, you got a great putter, Albert. Like, why are you bothering to get a fit? And he's like, no, they give you the putter. Like, whatever you want, like, whatever you want, they're going to send it to you. I was like, yeah, we were about to tee off, like the horn was about to go. And I was like, oh my God, like, give me the 35-inch Atlanta Toulon, you know, the Odyssey Toulons, the, you know, the absolutely primo. I want like a tour grip. And I said to the guy, is this really going to get to me? I'm flying back to Australia in like 2 days. And they're like, yeah, man, like, we guarantee you. And I was like, there's no way this thing's coming. So I got this, you know, like, it's a $700 putter, this thing, right? It's the absolute top of the range. So anyway, I played my round of golf, flew back to Australia, and then 2 weeks later I got this knock at the door and this brand-new Toulon putter came in through the front door and I was like, oh, my God. And it is the purest thing in the world. Like, you know, hopefully
that's awesome.
You'll get to see it when we play in a couple of weeks, mate, that's for sure. So, that's cool to hear, actually. Yeah, I didn't realise you got a Taylor sponsorship. You keep that under wraps a little bit.
No, I used to use them when I was playing a lot of tour golf. And,
that's right. You use them forever.
And, you know, they make great gear, obviously. So, yeah, look, this part of that, this new one I've got, it's the first time in a long time I've been really excited about it. So that's pretty cool. You gotta love your putter. Whoever you are out there listening, you got to sit that thing down and absolutely love it. That's non-negotiable. Doesn't matter what brand or shape it is. You really got to love your putter.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, you just got to love. And so much of it, when people say, you know, you don't even need to have a good reason, I reckon, a lot of the time. Like,
totally.
It looks great. It looks great. Like, that's good enough for me. You know, like, obviously there are, you know, whether you've got a huge arc in your stroke and or it's a bit straighter, like, that's going to influence what you want, toe balance or whatever. But the most important thing is you stand over it and go, this just looks like I'm going to hold it. You know, like, that's
100%. Yeah. I could not agree more.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of the shorter sticks, let's talk about short game really quickly. Like, I don't know if you've been following this very closely. I'm sure you have, but, like, there's just this raging debate on social media about how to chip. And there's, you know, look, I think all you can probably say in the end is that you can do it a million different ways. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of different ways that you can do it. But I think that, you know, it's a great time to talk about probably how – watching, you know, we haven't talked about Kapalua, we'll try and get to that in a bit. But, you know, obviously what's happening in Hawaii, the first event to kick off the season, which was just awesome to watch with Mr. Kirk, that was incredible. But you play now, you have been playing in the Northeast on, you know, a very different type of graph to what you're playing on right now, Bermuda down in Florida where you're coaching. Can you give us, like, what's your opinion, like, on the best way to chip, essentially, and maybe it is condition-dependent?
Yeah, no, it is condition-dependent. And, you know, I've said, actually, a lot of guys have sent me the whole debate going on with the, what is it, like, 15-degree down attack angle versus, say, 4. And you know what? If I sometimes relate it to the full swing. You know, if you look at an old-school guy like Bruce Litsky, who hit massive cuts off the tee, right? And then you look at, say, a Rory, it's big draws. They're both great. I mean, they both can work. Do you know what I'm saying? So like, there's guys who really are coming shallow with, call it, you know, 3-4, you know, degrees down attack angle and pitch the ball brilliantly. And maybe if you're a guy who, you know, has a more shut face, tons of shaft length with the full swing, tons of compression and divot, you know, more like, if you watch Spieth pitch, he kind of owns the divot. You know what I mean? Like, he gets down on it and just, you know, Phil talks about that too. But Phil can do both. I've seen Phil hit so many good pitches where there's no divot as well, right? And you can tell he's coming in shallower. But what I'm saying is both ways can work. In Florida, when it gets grainy, the more you can not dig the club. So, tend to have a little less shaft lean, use the toe more through the turf, get that body kind of pivoting through to get the club out of the ground, do those things, you're going to be better off. And there's so many guys here who pitch the ball well, and they all kind of do that. You won't really see guys stick it in the ground here and pitch well in South Florida.
And it probably depends on how much spin you're looking for as well, I would say. So obviously...
Yeah, and if you're trying to hit a high shot or a low shot, but in general, if you know you can hit that ball cleanly as opposed to really laying the sod or sticking it too much, especially down here, you're going to be better off.
Yeah. Well, that is the danger, isn't it? Like with the slow, if it's like, imagine it's raining where you are overnight, you get down to the course, like trying to really hit down on something, like you only have to be sort of millimeters out for it to be like laying a sod over it, as you say. So, you know, having maybe the slightly lower landing aeroplane rather than the aeroplane descending this way could be, you know, much better in that situation. Like, what is something that, like you said, that like you put the sharp more vertical, you were saying, I think, and you get your top, you get the heel up. Is that like for anyone out there that is maybe lives in the Northeast or even Northwest or whatever, and then they have to fly down south and play in those conditions? Like, what is the best way to avoid, like, especially in super grainy conditions, like just sticking that thing in the ground?
Yeah, definitely heel relief. So more toe, which is what you just described. Absolutely. And then to be honest, you know, if you've got one into really serious grain, you probably are going to have to almost own a little bit of divot. I mean, it's going to happen, right? You've just got to commit to it 100%. Still really, you know, in my opinion, turn through the shot and, don't quit on it. And even if the club sticks a little bit, if you've got good contact, you're fine, right? But there's guys here who putt the ball from 30 yards because it is very difficult, you know. And if you can do that and you're not confident, maybe you are better off, to be honest. However, there'll be a time there's a bunker in the way or something and you've got to know what you're doing. The more you can keep that weight forward, keep kind of pivoting through, make sure that you're not leaning it with that leading edge too much, use the toe with an open face. That's kind of what you got to do.
And have you ever experimented with like hybrids, chipping with hybrids and stuff like that? Or are you?
Yeah, you know, back in the AIS days, Mark Holland would teach us a scrape shot, he called it, with like a hooded four iron.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've heard one of the greatest players ever, who is a Florida legend, Raymond Floyd, taught a lot of guys that I've been around here, kind of like a similar shot where it's really high handle. It's almost like a putting stroke with a mid iron. And you can kind of draw it, and it's unbelievable in the grain here. It kind of, you know, skims through it, which, once you kind of get a feel for it, it almost feels like a putt a little bit. But, again, that club's never digging because you really got a high handle. You haven't got much loft, and that draw spin sort of kicks the ball through the grain, you know.
Yeah, right. So you can even hit it through the rough a little bit because it doesn't have as much backspin on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's not much rough here that I've played in Florida, but... Yeah, that draw spin with high handle, kind of like a scrape shot, which, again, we learned this when I was a teenager in the Australian Institute of Sport. We learned a lot of great short game stuff back there in Melbourne. Looking back at it, you know, a lot of the bunkers, the first thing they did was throw us in a pretty deep bunker with a six iron and said, learn to get out, right?
Yeah.
Which straight away you're going to learn great fundamentals. You're going to get, you know, for a bunker shot, you're going to get low, you're going to use the bounce, you got to understand playing, which took me a long time to do it, but once I did, they always say wait till you go back to a sand iron. It's like cheating if you can do it with a six iron, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess Xavi Ballesteros, a lot of his short game stuff, he grew up with a three iron in Spain. And I've seen footage of John Rahm on Instagram with like a four iron hitting little flop shots, and I mean it's just incredible technique. But as I said, then when you do go back to a lot of loft, it's just so easy. You know, it's like it's because if your fundamentals are good, it's like cheating. But anyway, you're getting to the grain. You know, you've got to practice off it, use the bounce, weight forward, pivot through. And, if you can go low, you're probably better off than trying to, you know, hit something too perfect.
Is it a strength of your game?
It is actually, yeah. It always was. When I was playing the tour, I used to give pitching lessons.
Wow,
I used to give to a lot of guys because I really didn't know the swing back then. I mean, this was a long time ago, 16 years ago. But I could pitch it, you know, into a ball washer off a tight lie if I wanted. I really had good hands. And I used to just use lob wedge from everywhere. Low shots, high shots, I would just use lob wedge. Didn't even know there was another club you could chip with.
And do you still do that when you play?
No, now if I don't, I'm not quite as good. I'll go 56 sometimes. But if I was feeling great, yeah, I'd go 60 and hit every shot with it. Which I've said this before.
So if you feel like, so if you need the ball to go just like a little bit further, like you just need to bump and run it a little bit further, like you'll go 56. But you'll never, will you ever chip with, like, I know you talked about the scrape shot with the boron, but are you like a pitching wedge chipping guy sort of thing, like that sort of loft, or is it, it's either 60 or 56?
If I'm feeling really good, it's 60 everywhere.
Yeah, right. I think that's easier too. I think that's easier. Like, for someone that isn't playing all the time, I think that, like, getting good with one club probably makes a fair bit of sense. Like, if you're trying to use four clubs, say you've got four wedges and you're trying to chip with all four of them in slightly different situations, if you're not playing all the time, you might go 3 weeks without actually hitting a 52 that rolls out a little bit. But if you hit your 60 every time, at least you sort of, I don't know, I think there's probably something pretty intuitive within you that knows how that club reacts every time, whether it's through the ground or in the air.
Well, most kids, you'll see, just use lob wedge and are fantastic around the greens. The other thing is it really does educate your hands, you know. So if you're if you have a teenage kid, and I'd leave him around the short game for as long as possible, around the chipping green, get him to hit high ones, low ones, try to put a lot of spin, and then you start really learning how to use your hands properly, you know. So you got to educate them. There's no secret. But yeah, if you get the fundamentals right, learn to really kind of create some spin and not dig too much, you're going to have a good short game. And every kid seems to have one.
Well, I was going to ask that. So I remember hearing Rummy talk about, like, this is Brett Rumford, when when he was in Europe, and like everyone's like, this guy is just a magician. Like, he's got one of the best short games of all time. And he reckons he got to America and he's like, he was just like, he was in the middle. He was just like, this is how everyone chips sort of over here sort of thing. Was that something that was really obvious to you? Like, I think here, obviously in Oz, like we get, I don't know, probably one of the criticisms in the past has been like a bit too swing focused and like just about being amazing ball strikers and not worried about the other stuff. Whereas you go to the States and it's just like exactly the opposite, where like doesn't matter how you swing it, just like get it down there and then have like the greatest short game of all time.
Yeah, no, they know how to get it in the hole here. And I think it's changing because maybe due to, you know, skill list and social media, you could be anywhere now and kind of learn some great stuff about the golf swing. Whereas back in the day, you know, if you didn't fly in and see a great coach before the internet and before all this, you wouldn't know what to do. You really had to, you know, there was no way of knowing. So there was a lot of homemade manufactured swings, and some worked brilliantly, which I think is kind of cool, right? You don't need everyone like a robot. But, yeah, here you get a lot of good short games. A lot of guys grow up in the South here, so a lot of it's grain. They learn how to chip and pitch the ball from a young age. No question, they know how to get it in the hole here, which at the end of the day, that's the name of it. As much as we love pretty golf swings, all of us in positions, and, you know, you got to get the ball in the hole. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, got to play. Got to get out there and play, that's for sure. So that's awesome, mate. Love that. Love that. So let's have a quick chat about, well, there's a couple of different things. Like, I'd love to, probably can't go an episode without doing a little bit of Live and PGA Tour. Did you catch any of Rory's statements in the interview he did on the, I think he was on a British football podcast, where he's come out and has completely changed his tone, essentially? I don't know if you caught any of that.
I did. Yeah, no, I did. I guess he's kind of saying he, you know, maybe, you know, overreacted, and that I think I didn't see actually the interview. I just saw some article on it that he said he doesn't blame Rahm and thinks it was a good business decision to go there. So I think we can see it's all slowly coming to some sort of agreement or some sort of, you know, I don't know how they'll do it, because, yeah, I just don't know how you can please every. By the way, you can't please everyone, can you? But there'll have to be some sort of merger. It still kind of sucks with the game being so disjointed with all that. So What do you think? What do you think is going to happen?
I just think that, yeah, I think that there's still going to be a pretty cool product in the end. I think, as you know, and you've said before, that the majors are going to be the big winners. Like, the majors are going to be huge now. Like, you know, not that they weren't in the past, but bringing everyone together at once is going to be incredible. Look, it's going to be difficult to see how the schedule sort of works out, but I kind of think there is room for, like, there's got to be room for this team's event. There's got to be room for something a little bit more dynamic. I mean, you know, I don't want to be too sort of, you know, Australia and Southern Hemisphere eccentric, but, like, you look at what's happening in 2020 cricket at the moment, like, it's unbelievable how not only huge that game is becoming, but how it's then affecting, you know, the traditional form of the game. This is happening everywhere, you know, in every sport.
Oh, true.
You know, baseball completely changed from what I can see last year. Like, they brought a shot clock in, like, you know, for the pitcher. So I just think, you know, even like basketball, like, brought in like a mid-season competition this year. Like, everything is very, very quickly changing. And I think that the thing that golf was going to go without that sort of disruption is probably a little bit naive. And, you know, like, it just stinks of, like, they just weren't ready for it. That's the thing. Like, they just weren't ready for it. They haven't had any competition, you know, like, zero competition forever. So they just weren't ready for it. And, like, probably in the same way that Rory was completely in denial that this was going to happen eventually, where the two sides were going to come together, because that's what money demanded, that's what the Saudis wanted, and the money was going to cause that to happen. His sort of attitude was very reflective of the US, the tour's attitude, which was, we're going to be able to beat this, which is ridiculous. But that is very sort of indicative of someone that's never had competition before, where they think they can beat anyone, even in this situation when you are completely outgunned by ridiculous amounts of money. But, you know, it looks like he's coming to his senses after 3 years. This was so obvious at the start. The PIF were trying to start conversations, as Norman said during the week. They were trying to start conversations years before LIV launched, and they refused to even take the conversation. So anyway, we've probably done it to death a little bit, Luda, but it'll be really, really interesting to see how the tour plays out. And, you know, in saying that, let's have a chat really quickly about what happened over the weekend. Did you get a chance to watch a whole lot of it? As much as we say, you know, and push back against the PGA Tour sometimes, I love it to death. Like, I absolutely love it. And watching the season kick off in Hawaii is always amazing, especially at this event where you've got so many great players together at once. Did you get a chance to take it all in?
I did. I saw, I think I got more texts than I've had in a long time about Jason Day's new outfit. But,
yes.
I like it. You know what? For him, I think he pulls it off. And I tell you, everyone was talking about it. So it's certainly shaking it up. I don't think I could pull it off, but JD pulls it off nicely. But I did see some of the golf.
Sorry, mate. I was just going to say, like, for Melbourne, like, what an ad. What an advertising campaign. Like, everyone, whether they loved it or hated it, they were talking about it. But, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You keep going.
No, I think it's hilarious. I love it. I think it's great. But, yeah, I did see the golf, and, I mean, look at the scoring. If the average person went and played there and said, okay, you know, mid to high 20s is going to win this every year, they just wouldn't believe it. Just shows you how good those guys are. I guess the course, I haven't played it. I've been there actually before, but I guess the course is kind of wide. And Chris Kirk, incredible. A lot of the big names. I mean, Jason played great. Scheffler was up there. Morikawa, all the usual suspects who are just phenomenal players. Yeah, maybe. Fagala looked great. You know, incredible playing by everyone. And Kirk is one of the few left who really loves that draw ball flight, actually. I've played a bunch with Chris back in the day.
Did you?
He would move the ball through the air as much as almost anyone I've seen back when I used to play with him. Even that was on the PGA Tour as well.
Wow.
Sometimes 15, 20 yards right to left on just like a stock shot back then.
Can he hit a fade?
I think he can. I think he has no trouble doing that, but he just loves that kind of push draw.
Mm.
And, you know, with the technology now, most guys you'll see don't do that because you can get a real nice, hot, penetrating ball flight with a fade now just through, you know, the tech, just through the drivers and the golf balls. But I mean, he's an absolute stud, and you've got to hold putts if you're going to shoot that line.
Totally, totally. And, like, but talking about his ball flight, like, even on the last hole, and it's probably because my bad shot is a flare, like, I can, you know, hit this thing out to the right like nobody's business, right? I very rarely sort of hook it, but I can hit the biggest flare out to the right you've ever seen. Like, he stood on the last hole, just needs to make par, obviously. But it looks like he's, I mean, obviously, you know, it's always a little bit of an optical illusion, but they had the, you know, they had the top tracer on it or whatever, and it literally looked like it started 25, 30 metres right, and he just hooped it down there. And I'm like, if I started that far right, I've got the chance of, like, hitting it another 100 metres right of that. You know what I mean? But he's, look, he's obviously looked at that ball flight his entire life and had complete trust over it, which is what, that's all that matters.
Oh, it's so true. No, what a huge win. And, yeah, most elite players, when they struggle, get stuck. So it's a big block or it's a hook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they love to go away from that and sort of go to that little bullet fade. But he just kind of owns it. He owns that little push draw. And what a huge win to start the season, no question.
And talking about the scoring, I've got, like, a bit of a cool story there. Like, you know, I've worked with Craig Spence for a decade, right? So Spence and I are really good mates. And Craig was just, like, looking at the scoring these days, you know, because he hasn't competed. He competed for, like, 4 or 5 years on the US tour. Maybe, I mean, I've got, he's got so many cool stories. I could tell you a hilarious story about when he thought he was going to get back on tour. He was at Q School. He's just shot 62 and he thought, I'm in. And then he just saw these 61, 60, 61. Everyone went past him. Anyway, but he was just like his most famous victory was obviously over Greg Norman. Right at the Australian Masters, and I think he shot
with the Oakley shades,
with the Oakley shades and the broomie at, you know, at a very slippery Huntingdale, and you know, you hold that sort of 6-footer down the hill to beat Norman, pretty much still in his prime. But he shot 12 under over 4 rounds, and he reckons that's the lowest score he's ever shot in his life. Right, I think 12 or 14 over 4 rounds. Can't remember exactly what it was. And now you just watch, like, average events, like on the Aussie tour or like on the, you know, the Challenge tour or whatever, and blokes shooting like 30 under over 4 rounds. It's just like a completely different level of scoring you've got to go to and be able to do it day after day. Like, it's one thing to shoot 6 under, 7 under, but then to go 6 under, 7 under again, like, how many times you see people go deep and then, you know, shoot 2 over or something like that. That's the, like, anyone can shoot a good score on one day. To do it 3 days, 4 days in a row, it's like, it's crazy what they're doing these days.
Yeah, they do a great job here, especially in America, with that, because you have a lot of tournaments, junior events, amateur events, but even the junior events, they'll put them maybe a bunch of tees up, but they just get them used to going low, right? And they might not set the course up too tough, but the kid will walk off and go, yeah, I shot 67. Even if it's from, call it, you know, 5,500 yards. But mentally, you get used to it. Whereas in Australia, I think, and other places, you just go play the Saturday comp off the whites. And greens are pretty firm, courses firm. You might shoot even and think you're doing well, but you're not really getting used to tearing it up. Whereas here, they're just doing it since they can remember.
Yeah, it's such a good idea. Yeah, it's so true, isn't it?
You just makes sense, right?
Totally, totally. Like, if you can't picture it, if you've never done it before, it's hard to do it again, isn't it? Like, you know, I can't remember his name, but whoever Bannister was it who ran the 4-minute mile for the first time, like, it was the very first time. Within a year, 25 people had run, you know, run the 4-minute mile or whatever it was. And it's because people could visualize it. And I think it's so important for golfers to do the same thing. Like, if you know you can shoot 4 or 5 under, or if you're a 12 handicapper and you know that you can shoot 75 because, you know, you've put yourself off the forward tees occasionally and do it. Like, I think that's...
Well, I remember when I was a junior on this topic, I think this is great for anyone listening, by the way. If you're ever in a scoring rut or you're looking to go low, or if you've got a kid, he hasn't broken par. I remember Stephen Bowditch used to do this, I think, in high school. They'd go play the very forward tees, you know, the red tees. Mm. And even if, you know, every hole's drivable, you walk off with 5, 6 under, you just get used to going low. So maybe once a week, you know, obviously if it's not in a competition, go play the absolute forward tees. Even if it just seems too easy, it's actually a good thing because you got to learn to just birdie every other hole or whatever. And, you know, again, you just get in that mindset of shooting low.
I don't know if you've seen it, but this is what swimmers do now, the sprinters. They literally tie elastic bands to them and pull them forward, right, at high speed. So you just get used to your body moving through the water at speed, and it just retrains the way your brain works. And I think
100%.
Yeah, I think it's a great piece of advice. But mate, it doesn't sound like you've got much time for playing golf. You're flat out, you were telling me, with your lessons now. It's,
yeah, no, it's been busy. It's been really good. It's busy's good. So how about you? Been busy coaching?
I haven't. No, not yet at all. I haven't taught a golf lesson in person in since I moved up here, because I'm still with Grant Field, who will get on the show at some stage. He's the head teaching pro. He's Cam Smith's coach at Pelican Waters. The facility is still being built. It's going to be the best facility in the country in the next 6 weeks or something like that. But like,
I believe it.
The full teaching facility is actually, they're still putting the finishing touches on it. So it's a little bit delayed, but it's, you know, for me, it's been nice. You know, it's the first time I've had a break away from, you know, I'm still teaching a little bit online, but it's a break away from in-person coaching I've had in like 15 years, essentially. So I'll be ready and firing to make it happen, when it's available. But mate, looking forward to catching up. We've 2 weeks' time, we'll be together in Orlando, and you'll come to the PGA show. But then it sounds like we might be able to get a game in together, which I can't wait to do.
Yeah, well, we'll keep that under wraps. It's going to be fun. We're going to make that happen. I'm excited for that.
It's top secret. It's top secret. So no one asks what's going on. So anyway, brother, mate, thanks so much. Another fantastic show. And as I say always, like, if anyone wants to ask any questions, I think we're going to get that firing up, Luda. We'll get some, like, you know, some phone in questions. We'll get some students involved. We're going to look at some golf swings and stuff as well and bring that into it. So if you're out there and you want to get in contact with either Luda or myself, DM us on Instagram or just get me at Baden at skillers.com. But until next time, we will see you soon on the Skillers podcast.